The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes. Yeah, welcome back again. My name is Shane Stapleton. With me this week, I have Declan Maron from Ladbrokes. Declan, how are you doing?
Good, Hugh.
Paul O'Hare from the Mirror.
Good, Shane. How are you doing?
Flying it. And Bernard Flynn from the Mirror. How are you doing?
Great, Shane.
Good. First things first, lads, it's Cheltenham week. Have you stuffed your pockets or lost your bollocks?
I had a great treble, Apple's Jade. I'm never going to eat anything to do with Apple again. I was making a fortune, only for... That was my treble. It was my banker. And the first day, I got sick of it after that. It wiped me.
Make your money back on Apple Shakira, her sister, in the last
very good. You go.
That yeah. might have gone off by the time you listened to this. Paul?
I had a pretty sort of average first day, average being code word for crap. And it was a bad first day. But then I had a good, reasonable day yesterday. I had a 20-1 winner, Blueberry, yesterday. So
I kind of gave up too much on betting on these things, especially, oh geez, I always remember Wimbledon, or it was around 2011 or 2012, and I was betting big on, I think it was Sharapova to beat Laura Watson or something. She was 4-1 down in the second set, and I still thought, you know what, Sharapova will turn this around. So I put all the money in the account, which was about €30 on it, massive money, says you, and Sharapova ended up winning. And I looked at my account, refresh, zero. What I'd actually done is put all my money on Sharapova to win the very next point in the game by mistake, and I lost it all.
Well, putting £30 on the next point of a game.
Yeah, so I don't look. Yeah. I obviously do have a bet now and again, but
it's the first time I really looked at Cheltenham from the jockey's point of view, and you know Ruby and everything else went on, but it really just struck home at me. These guys are just incredible. The danger, it's such. I didn't realise how dangerous sport it was. Tony McKay, I love listening to him. I have to say, I was gripped by his insight. And he was brilliant at this, you know, giving a real good account of how tough and hard and dangerous for the jockeys. It is actually incredible.
I think jockeys are, and not just because it's Cheltenham week, and it's Cheltenham week, so everybody in the country is talking about Cheltenham and everybody's an expert. But I think jockeys are, without doubt, the most underappreciated, undervalued sportsmen and women in Ireland. I really do.
I'd have to agree. After this week, that's the one thing that struck me.
Yeah, because Cheltenham's once a year in terms of the Cheltenham Festival, but these lads are going up and down the country every single day of the week. And, you know, it's a dangerous sport. We all know that.
And but Ruby will be out now. Hopefully he'll be back for Punches Town.
Exactly, yeah.
We'll go into more of the racing in a little bit, in a little while. Also on the show, we're going to start out with Six Nations, it being the gladiatorial weekend for the Grand Slam. Bit of Premier League, FA Cup, both codes in the GA. And Tiger Mania is back, so I think we have to have a little nod to that too. First of all, Eddie Jones has referred to the scummy Irish, and it was some sponsor's event, and he said it with a smirk on his face. I took no issue with that at all. I think if the players need that as motivation to win this game, it's pointless. It's just a distraction for the...
Yeah.
It's just a distraction, isn't it? Really?
Yeah,
it's got nothing to do with anything. Mm.
No, like it's as you say, they're not going to need any more motivation for this game.
Would you be upset by that? Do you care?
Not particularly, because when I saw sort of news breaking yesterday about the comments, I was kind of intrigued by it. And then I discovered that it was a video from last summer, from last July at some corporate event. Yeah, and he kind of turned, you know, if you've seen the video, he kind of turns to a guy who's on the stage. I couldn't make out who was on the stage. I'm not sure who it is. Maybe other people know, but I got the impression it was an Irish person on the stage, because he kind of turned and went, you know, the scummy Irish, pointing to whoever else was up on stage with him. I just think that, you know, okay, maybe I was going to say badly timed. This is from nearly a year ago, you know, and it's surfaced now. But Jesus, I think people have probably said worse about English people, like, you know what I mean, here in this country.
Yeah, we're not going to bring up 800 years, are we, Bernard?
No, the only thing...
It's a fair long while now.
It is. I've watched a lot of his interviews, and I'm actually going to be in Cheltenham, and unfortunately, Shane, I'm going to miss you.
You're going to be in Twickenham, I'd imagine.
And
do not dare delete that. Go, Bernard.
No. I'm going to be in Twickenham, and I'm actually going with Graeme Geraghty and Colm Kyle, but I've listened to him, and... The arrogance of the man since he took over the job has been just, I mean, incredible. Look at Schmidt, different guys, even Gatlin now, take or leave him. His arrogance and his attitude as a top manager coach. Look at Schmidt and a bit in class, and he's a different animal completely. But I just think he's under serious pressure. Mm. And wouldn't it be great to ram it down his throat as far as you possibly could? And I think the Irish will.
And what are the odds, Declan?
Yeah, looking at the betting here, England are evens. The draw is 20-1 and Ireland are 5-6. I think it's one of those kind of things situationally, like if the situation was completely different, if Ireland had taken a kick and then England were going on to win the Six Nations this weekend, we would be using this as all the fuel we need to beat them. But it's the exact opposite. We don't need any more motivation. The players are
they're dangerous calm. Though. That's the only thing.
They are. The Irish players are calm. They don't really need any more motivation. No. They've got as much as they need.
You
really
can't go from like back-to-back championship winners like England are to a bedraggled bunch just in the space of a year.
I was just going to say, you can tell though, and again, that video was from last summer, but you can tell he's very proud of that record that he had, the 23 games and the one defeat, and the one defeat was to Ireland. So he himself will clearly be motivated, A, to put things right after a few bad results, but he'll have that. He'll have his team, you
was
know, well motivated.
Was it some kind of motivational speech?
It was a sponsors event. I'm not 100% sure.
I think it was supposed to be some sort of motivation, which is almost ironic given how unmotivated and how undisciplined his team look at the moment.
So that's one of the big things. They've given away something like 29 penalties in their last two games, and they had one of the guys who's going to be a linesman for the game this Saturday.
I was listening to this.
Marius van der Westhuizen. He was in with them during the week, talking them through all the rules. And
refereeing a training game, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, so like he hasn't broken any rules by doing that, nor have England, but surely this isn't right. Yeah.
Very questionable.
Yeah. So should he be stood down, this guy?
I mean, absolutely,
because
definitely.
Because you get to learn what this linesman's about. You get to curry favour with him all week, you know. Mm.
You don't see that happening in other codes. Like, you
know. Yeah, so...
In any other sports, in any other... I can't imagine that going down anywhere else. Any other sport, any other
team. I think
the Dublin
football team did it at one stage, if I can recall, with the referee.
Coming from a Meath man, yeah. Go on, yeah.
I remember very, very well. Well, I got to be careful to mention the people involved in case there's any... that shouldn't happen. But what I'd actually say, looking at it, is if England, they lose again, I'd say now, everyone involved in English rugby might be overly happy with Jones, I'd have to honestly say.
Is that combined with results combined?
Results and his attitude, yeah. I just don't like. I don't like what he's about. Even top level coaching, you know, the nearest at the moment is probably Mourinho with his arrogance. Even the other night when they're beaten, trying to justify his own
existence. Touch on him
as well.
Yeah.
But Jones, I'd say, it would be a travesty for Ireland to go over and not win their third. A grand slam. It would be fantastic to do it against the English.
Just then, how strong Ireland are looking. There's a couple of interesting stats flowing around. I thought this was really interesting that it's the team who's won the most rucks in the tournament. So Ireland with 557 against the side who lost the most, England with 25. It just shows you the real lack of discipline and sort of disarray about England at the moment. I should point out as well, we are double odds on winning first try scores. If your player goes on to score a second try, and that's been flying in. Conway has gotten absolutely stuck in. He's 16-1. Last weekend to get the first try because he grabbed two and the week before actually against Wales.
Jacob Stockdale. Can't he become the top try scorer in Six Nations history, I think, if he gets one try. So.
A lot of this will probably come down to Sexton against Owen Farrell as well, who were vying for that number 10 shirt with the Lions last summer. And you know the way we get carried away with the rugby talk and the way it's built up with this nonsense talk, you know, the heroes and the emotion and all this kind of stuff. I saw in the past week, Joe Schmidt described as the greatest Irish coach of all time. And I also saw Johnny Sexton being referred to as the heart, the soul and the conscience of this team. Now, could you top that for nonsense talk? I mean, I found that hard to take.
No,
and it's from a very good writer, by the way, but Jesus, I found that difficult to swallow.
You see, the rugby fraternity, it's a completely different world. It's not the world that I would know, but they do exaggerate, they do blow it up. They like to keep the tactics and all of that, that they're on a different planet. The Arne Joshop doesn't really know what they're speaking about, but he probably, from a rugby point of view, he probably is close to that. Just go back, touch one thing in England.
Well, he might be the brains of the operation.
He might
the
be
conscience.
The out half is the quarterback in American football. It's as simple as that. It's effectively, he is that important. But, I mean, he's been brilliant for Ireland. There's no overall, and come back and the injuries, etc. But I'd say, just go back to the English. And it was a great discussion the other day about their mindset. Against France, they had to score four tries to stay in the championship.
Yeah.
And they kick a penalty for 53 or 4 metres when they should have been kicking into the corner to go for a try. I mean, I just think the whole, I don't know what's really going on. If they get their act together, they're the one team that could stuff us. There's no doubt about it. But you go back to Sexton. I mean, but Shane, look at all the rugby stars. They're up in a pedestal. Did you see here the debate about Farrell? Farrell has played nearly three times, I think, or two and a half times the amount of minutes that Sexton has this year. Ireland and Joe Smith, they've minded him. Farrell has been flogged. And the English guys don't get the same protection. And they're not looked after. Like the Irish rugby players, how many games are these guys playing on average year with Leinster? Some of them don't play, what, a half a dozen? 10 games?
You could also make the argument that Eddie Jones feeds into that, because he's certainly, when it comes to the players, talking about what he expects of them, more, harder, faster, more physical. So that could probably feed into what you're saying there, which is they're just, you know, broken after a couple of years under Jobs. The same old comparisons we make with different coaches who can only last a certain amount of time in jobs.
I think the Irish players have been very well minded. They've good contracts compared to the French, compared to the English. It's all about the Irish team. Mm. I mean, and look, look at the Leinster, unless it's the Championship, European. I mean, the Irish guys don't figure most of them.
I don't think it changes the fact, though, that while the description of Sexton might have been a bit OTT or a bit flary, I don't think it changes the fact that it's probably right in terms of the Farrell-Sexton battle this weekend, because if Sexton and Murray fire, Ireland fire, if Farrell's firing for England,
So who are you backing?
I was looking on the betting for this one. I still think it's going to be a tight game, but I could see a couple of kicks doing it for Ireland. So Ireland 1 to 5 points or 6 to 10 points. You're getting about 5 to 1, 11 to 2, which is a pretty fair price considering. I mean, the handicap is skinny enough there. England plus 1 at evens, the draw 25s, and Ireland minus 1 at evens. So I think something like that. Go for Ireland's winning margin 1 to 5 at 5 to 1 or 6 to 10, 11 to 2.
And what's England 1 to 5 points?
England 1 to 5, I will get that for you. It's 7 to 2.
I think that's not a bad price.
England are dangerous. I'm going to be. I think they're extremely dangerous. I'd be worried if Sexton has a day like he had a couple of weeks ago when he missed four bad kicks. I think it was, and we're depending on Murray to kick and bring us home. I'd be worried about that.
Sexton missing those kicks was still massively influential in the game, and I think the level England need to improve from their last two performances is just far too much to overcome. An Irish team. If this Irish team plays at 90%. England still need to improve a huge amount to get to that level and match them.
Ireland minus one, leave money. That's the bet.
Does wrapping up the title, the actual title as such of the Six Nations last week, does that help Ireland's cause in terms of...
I don't think so. I think you always play your best when it's all on the line, or certainly more likely to give 100%.
I think the pressure is upped on England, though, because they don't particularly have anything to play for bar pride, which they don't look full of at the moment.
So Ireland could be... That means basically that Ireland could be a little undercooked, and the fact that they need this more than us.
On Ireland, the Grand Slam is huge. It's everything for Smith. Everything.
Yeah, I would say the Grand Slam is pressure enough for Ireland. I would say England probably have less to play for.
Yeah.
Right, lads, so that's the rugby then. We'll move on to the Premier League, which is, it's like soccer is still the home of the Wild Wild West and the last place you're going to look to for role models. It's been some week of it when you think about it, like Jamie Carragher spitting, I'm sure he didn't mean it, but to land on that young girl's head. But that incident, then you had the Greek league suspended because the president of PAOK Salonika, he marched onto the field and he had a gun in a hip holster.
I was in that stadium in 2011 when Shamrock Rovers played. I didn't have a gun, no. But to say that the PAOK fans are lively is putting it mild. we got to the ground early. It was the Shamrock Rovers 2011 Europa League campaign, and there was no public transport running. There was strikes in Greece. There was no refuse collection. There was like 4 feet of rubbish everywhere, and you just had to walk everywhere. And the stadium was a couple of miles out, and was searing heat. So we all sort of, six or seven of the journalists, trekked off good and early to the ground. By the time we got there, we were nearly passing out with the heat. But some seriously intimidating characters hanging around that place.
You mean they're mad? They're just mad.
Well, he's apologised since, so that's something. And then just to round off the madness this week, West Ham fans storming the field on four occasions when they lost 3-0 to Burnley. Now, they were shocking and all that, but still, come on, lads.
Yeah.
Have some sort of...
But you could see, did you see the fella who sort of had the George Best sort of hair who got out onto the pitch, and he gets back into the stands, and if you watch some of the video footage of it all, he probably thought he was doing a great thing, you know. Got in back into the stand and he was, you know...
Took a hiding
from some of the West Ham fans.
I'm not sure if you saw a lot of details all about what, like, everything about those incidents. It's pretty... terrifying and mad stuff. Miguel Delaney, I think, wrote a piece about that, basically getting to the sort of ultras level at West Ham, which it always has been in and out of, but certainly you look at countries like Italy who have a very big problem with that, and it's getting to that kind of level by the looks of it there, West Ham.
So we'll look at the matches in a second, but just one stat that I came across this week related to Newcastle, who were in 13th place, and it just highlights the benefit of beating the right team to stay afloat. Of their 14 defeats in the league this season, just one defeat has been to a team below them, so which is obviously crucial to make sure that someone doesn't climb over you. And of their wins, the only team above them that they've beaten has been Man United. So they're right there at 13th. They're beating most of the teams below them and losing to the most of the teams above them. So anyway, it was a stat I came across that I thought was interesting. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
I'm looking at it here. Yeah, they're still only 5 points clear of the drop, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe they'll continue to beat the right teams.
Mark Hughes' appointment as well, is it? Bit of big news as well.
With Southampton, yeah. Mm-hmm. The merry-go-round just continues to go.
Incredible stuff.
Yeah. It is. I think he's probably a better choice, though, than a sort of a Pardew type. Like you see, Pardew's went into West Brom and... Yeah. Absolutely zero has changed, you know, nothing, and they're gone down.
And they refuse to give him the boot as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm just going to ask you, what do you think of Coleman going, Paul, to Sunderland from Wales? I mean, what was your own opinion as a soccer guru? Wasn't it incredible, wasn't it?
Back. That's about amazing. As left field as the biggest prize winner at Cheltenham this week.
I found it
astounding.
I remember the night in Cardiff when Ireland beat Wales, James McLean's goal, and everyone was celebrating qualifying for the playoff, and the press conference afterwards, like the Welsh sort of manager Coleman, the journalist, everybody in that room was just so deflated, and there was definitely an air that Coleman was going to leave. And I presume he just saw sort of a big club, you know, I use that term loosely, you know, in terms of going in there and sort of saving the day and building, and you know, maybe sort of a long term project.
Guy's actual reputation, move like that.
I'd say he thought he couldn't have a worse night than that, and then he took over the Sunderland job.
Yeah. I suppose hindsight, but it's kind of a baffling move.
So the only game I would say that's massively interesting this weekend, the Premier League, there are four games: Bournemouth, West Brom, Huddersfield, Crystal Palace, Stoke, Everton. Liverpool Watford is the only one that really stands out here. What are you expecting from Liverpool here after losing to Man United last week?
I think Klopp probably can be, outside of Man City, probably is the guy who's turned it around a little bit more than anybody. Look at Mourinho, you look at Wenger, what's going on there, if you like. Look at Conte. I think he'll take an awful lot out of the season. I really do. They should win. Liverpool should actually win, and the way City have been, outside of City, they've won the Premiership.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's interesting.
The thing about Liverpool is, though, the blueprint, and it's been said a couple of times, but the blueprint is there to beat them. You know exactly what you have to do. There's only one real way to play to beat them well, I suppose, and it is the way Manchester United played. But most teams in the league can't do that to the same extent. This is the standard kind of game where you think Liverpool should steam them, and they might slip up, but I think going the goal scorer market on this front, it's another good place to get your value. We're double odds again. If your player scores inside 15 minutes, Liverpool have a habit of doing that. So they're frequently, Salah this season has been double odds. Well worth a look. I mean, they're 2-11 in the betting, Liverpool 6-1 the draw, and 16-1 about Watford. So I think your goal scorer market is a likely place to get a bit of value.
Paul, as the senior football analyst.
I just think, you know, there's 4 points between Liverpool and Chelsea in that sort of battle for fourth and fifth. Liverpool, you know, look after, just get the job done against Watford, kick on a little bit, and just nail down a top four finish for next season. And then I suppose they've got the draw for the Champions League quarterfinals to look forward to as well. So, you know, they still have plenty to play for. 5 points between themselves and Man United in second. Game's running out. They're probably not going to finish second in the league, but if they can cement top four, beat Watford, and enjoy their Champions League draw, I think it'd be a good weekend for Liverpool.
Just to touch on Watford and the match betting, they're a big price, but they're still a little bit unknown with the new manager. I think since the new manager's gone in, they're coasting, they're popping
streaky,
up every now and again.
Very streaky team.
Yeah, and even the kind of game where you expect them to take a look at someone like Arsenal last week and kind of go, they should bully them, they should do this or that. Nothing of the sort. They didn't really turn up, so wouldn't be surprised. Something like Salah to score a hat-trick 17-2, something like that could be interesting. Firmino to score a hat-trick 18-1.
Salah first goal scorer and 3-0 at 14-1. I mean, I reckon Liverpool will steamroll them. And I mean,
I think so too. Yeah.
All right, well, that's the only Premier League game we'll look at. But it's a sixth round of the FA Cup as well. Man United against Brighton is the big one on Saturday. It's just so interesting with Jose Mourinho. I mean, how many great managers don't kind of realise that their time as the great innovator has come and gone? Because, you know, back when he was with Porto, beating Man United, what he did with Inter Milan, and even to some degree turning around, getting hammered by Barcelona 5-0 by Guardiola, and then the following season winning the Premier League, if I remember correctly. But like, it does it feel like his time has passed in the same way that Wenger hasn't realised or refuses to accept that his time as the innovator is gone?
Yeah, I think it's kind of, you know, maybe going back with football over maybe say 10, 20 years or so, there was longevity in this job, you know. And there still might be that, but you see with the Wenger thing that they're just getting tactically outplayed by teams and the game is evolving quicker than it ever has done before. I just find that Mourinho, the stubborn streak in him, the thing that would bother me the most about him is that I don't believe he's getting the best out of that team.
Yeah.
And for whatever way, for whatever reason, he just refuses to sort of acknowledge that fact. That team can play a more expansive brand of football. You know, there's a lot of dead weight in that team as well. That can't be disputed. But
do you think one of the big issues for him is that a bit like you look at an Allardyce, a team badly needs to stay up, they go with Allardyce to keep them up. Mourinho's like that for teams that really badly want maybe a bit of European history, like Chelsea, like Porto, like even Inter, you could argue. United definitely don't want a European history at the sort of behest of anyway decent football, whereas most of the teams he's done stuff at previously would accept that. Real were the exception, booted him. United are another exception. You won't get away with that. Mm-hmm. They have enough of a pedigree of a European history, of a royalty about them, that they just won't take this kind of brand of football.
It's interesting that it looked like they'd turn a corner in the league by coming from two down to beat Crystal Palace, from turning around against Chelsea to win, to beating Liverpool, and then they flop against Sevilla. Bernard, you're a United fan.
I am.
Do you want him out?
What would concern me would be, and I just used to love watching the way they would play, and you've touched on it there, there's no doubt about it, Declan, that the confidence of a number of the players, he seems to have single-handedly dismantled some of them. I mean, you look at some of the players now for the money, whether they're good enough or not, Paul's right, there's a lot of deadwood, I think, in there. But they should be playing far better than they are. There's a problem. I think it's the first time he's been really tested on a man-management basis, one-on-one situations. And I think he's failed with a number of the players. They don't know what they're at. They don't know where to stand. And they don't know what way they're playing supposed to play. You don't know what you're going to get from United.
It's too much of a coincidence. It's okay if you have one player, say the Pogba thing that's been analysed to death, but if you've a number of players who just don't know what they're at.
Sanchez losing the ball Sanchez 20 times.
Exactly,
the other night.
Yeah. Sanchez has been really poor.
His performance in the last few games, United Van Paul, it has been appalling.
I think that's partially, again, with the system, though. I mean, these players have never particularly shown in the way that they liked it under Mourinho. He's changed the likes of Oscar, of Hazard when he was at Chelsea to be chasing back and defending.
Damien Duff even before that.
Yeah, exactly. So.
And yet, you look at the league table, right? So, you know, you remove everything from it. They've progressed from last season. Okay, they won a couple of trophies last season.
Because I'm just talking about
pure standings in the table. Do you know what I mean?
But points-wise, was it something like 24 points they finished off the top last year, and it mightn't be far off that by the end of the year, even if they do finish second compared with, was it sixth last year?
Yeah.
I think no matter what they do in that sort of zone, even improving very slightly, or you can put all that analysis up, the fans just won't accept that as a style going forward. Even if it's winning them the league, maybe that's the only exception. If they're winning doubles of Premier Leagues and Champions League, is probably the only exception.
And yet he gets a contract extension till 2020, you know.
But is that just to try and put off the talk?
I think so, and I see those type of things happening, and you automatically just think that's the club protecting their asset and compensation for the club. If somebody comes in, he's still been linked with PSG this summer, you know.
Yeah. I think about Rashford as well. Like, he did so well on the left side against Liverpool, scored a couple of goals, and then he's thrown out on the right. Now, should that make a massive difference? I mean, you're just at the opposite flank. It shouldn't make that much of a difference, really.
But the style of play, I mean, he's cutting inside to shoot. He's coming in as nearly a second striker, drifting in from the left, where Liverpool left space down that side. That wasn't the case with Sevilla. He's playing as a winger.
Goes back to that stubbornness, though. It's that stubbornness. Like, play players where they're thriving. You know?
And you see all these managers and the likes of Germany, where there's like Julian Nagelsmann, there's Thomas Tuchel, and there's this guy, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he's 32 and he's the manager of Schalke as well. These what are referred to sometimes as, I think Mehmet Scholl called them, laptop managers.
Clipboard managers as well.
Like, you have these guys who are clearly, you know, trying to I don't know, study the game and do it a different way, whereas Mourinho just seems stuck in the past.
Andreas Villas-Boas came in and was one of those in the Premier League, and he, you know, he was sort of almost laughed out of town, you know, for having
he kind of deserved that for what he's up to recently.
Dakar Rally. I loved the fact that he went in the Dakar Rally.
If you're not a serious football manager, if you're Dakar rallying about the place.
Come on, he was obviously only tipping away over in the Russian league anyway, just biding his time until the Dakar Rally came along.
The one thing, I can't get my head around United. I looked at clips of Ferguson the other night, and he was talking very closely to the guy beside him. Now, he was red with temper. No, he was, but at the end of the match, he was in a tirade. He was obviously giving his opinion. Like, there's no way, if Mourinho continues, he won't be there by the end of next season if this continues.
We'll have to look up odds We'll have to look up odds for Fergie coming back, I think.
There's no question of that. Yeah, we win the league.
He'd be in there tomorrow morning if he was asked or allowed.
Right, so who's going to win this game? Man United beating Chris Hughton's Brighton 2-0 is evens. How do you feel about that?
Good bet.
Because, you know, the flat track bullies style that United have.
Yeah, Brighton have a little bit about themselves in the last, you know, few weeks. But it's such a big game for United in terms of, you know, it's the only thing they can really win now. So, you know, put a bit of emphasis
on this.
Why
is this guy not our Irish manager? I mean, I think he's everything.
Why would you move from Brighton now?
I agree with that end of it. But at the end of the day, do you listen to all the guys speaking about him? Isn't it Murray there 2 weeks ago on the Soccer Morning show on a Sunday morning, Sky? They rave about him, how good he actually is in player management and, you know, getting the best out of players. Look at Murray's. He's scored 6 and 8 or something like that.
He's done a good job pretty much everywhere he's gone. Yeah. Newcastle, Norwich. Yeah. You know?
To do a good job in Newcastle says it all.
Yeah. Jeez. And the fans don't forget him for that. Like he's really highly regarded up there by the fans.
As you said, I think it's going to be a tight game though. Under 2.5 goals in the game at evens or first half result draw 27-20.
Are we all going to go United here? United at home seems fairly.
I think that even money to nil beating Brighton. I think that's the one. That's the one even money. Yeah.
Lukaku first goal scorer 11-4. It's exactly the type of team he scores against. Assuming he starts.
And again, if he scores inside 15 minutes, you get double. So
who doesn't want a piece of that? So we'll move on to Leicester against Chelsea on Sunday, also in the sixth round. What are the odds there, Declan? We'll come to those in a second. But just first of all, just the Messi show, really. Beating them during the week, beating Chelsea in the 3-0 during the week. It was just absolutely incredible to watch my doppelganger do what he did to Barcelona. But the way people often say, why would Coutinho leave Liverpool midway through a season when he could win a Champions League with Liverpool and be cup tied with Barcelona? Okay, first of all, he can win a title with Barcelona.
Messi is there.
But just to go and play with Messi, surely that is the career fulfillment above all else, to say, I played with Messi.
Paul, has there ever been in 10 years, I know Ronaldo and that there, but the actual skill, the assist, the sheer artistry of the man, apart from 600 goals or whatever it is, I'm 52 and I've never seen anything quite like him.
No, likewise, yeah.
Never, I mean, not it's as old a as joy. You, but, and a bad night or a bad season.
Unnecessary there, Paul.
I don't think he's even got the credit that the skill and the things this guy,
I think he gets the credit. So I don't think that's in the
I just only worldwide. There's been nothing like him.
Yeah.
Calling him the greatest of all time is not accolade enough for
you. I watched the Pelé documentary twice over the Christmas, which was, it was actually brilliant. But when the documentary is done about Messi, at Christmas, my dad sat beside me. He came over and stayed with me. And Messi's top 100 goals, I think, was on. It was just something from a different planet. It was amazing. I think the man is just incredible.
I tell you what, there is a documentary in a sense of your man Gillian Balague's book. If you read that, I think I got about 200 pages and I had to call it a day. It's like an encyclopedia. It's gigantic. It goes, 300 pages, and it wasn't passed by the time he was 6 years old. So if you want a really detailed version of Messi's life, go in there, have a look.
Yeah, the size of the machine.
Who's the greatest Gaelic footballer of all time? We're not just a pre
question for me.
Yeah, for you.
I have a couple of, my childhood hero was Mikey Sheehy.
I only want one name now.
To me, Jack O'Shea.
Jack O'Shea. There you go. A man's man.
Ask me in a few years' time, and maybe a dub could be in there. Could be a dub.
Anton O'Toole always sticks out in my head.
Blue Panther,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Blue Panther, yeah.
Was it the Blue Panther?
Yeah.
Which one?
The Blue Panther, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Dermot Connolly's the new Blue Panther, isn't he?
He's not playing.
Banner of the Dubs fans on Hill 16, the new Blue Panther.
I think just about Jack O'Shea.
Just about Jack O'Shea.
Best I ever played with, Colm O'Rourke.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
That sweet left foot.
He was just an amazing all-round leader. Ball winner, tackler. He was incredible, actually.
He's no Leo Messi, though. The Leo Messi, the way he flicked the ball through Courtois' legs for both goals. Like, the first time, I was looking at it again, I was like, did he actually mean that? Because he never hits a ball astray, really. Mm. So he clearly tried to do it, which is nuts. And it reminded me of, did you see last week, LeBron James did this kind of, he was dribbling with the ball and he kind of bounced it behind himself through a teammate's legs onto himself again. I was just thinking, it was just like, there's two absolute artists at their sport.
I think there's more sort of method with Messi. I think, say, the whole Messi-Ronaldo thing, I think Ronaldo will chance something a bit more.
Yeah.
You know, he might sort of kick a ball past someone and tear off after him, or these free, you know, the Ronaldo free kicks, which, you know, when does he really ever score?
Messi actually deserves to be called the conscience of football, the heart soul of conscience of football. Like, so who's going to win this game anyway?
Leicester against Chelsea. Leicester 12-5, the draw 12-5, and Chelsea 11-10. Hard to fancy Chelsea in most games at the moment, isn't it? They look a little bit... Yeah. Astray. If you look, I think a lot of the problems come from their recruitment. Zappa Costa, Barkley, Giroud, a bunch of players they don't need. Don't particularly strengthen them. But you'd argue Morata at least could have been a reasonable signing if they had
We've derided him here a few times.
Yeah, we have.
Do you reckon Conte signed those sort of players to drive the manager mad?
No, Conte's gone in summer. I don't think he had anything to do with these, and he's very clearly unhappy about it, but... Yeah.
Will Chelsea start with Giroud up front, Morata or Hazard in the false line?
Giroud was bandaged up there after the Barcelona game, so he might not be available. I'm not really sure what the latest is on that. He is still available there in the betting for a score 9-2. Morata's at 9-2 as well. At the moment, you can't fancy either of the strikers. You'd have to be looking at Willian and Hazard for the most part, 5-1. Hazard, 7-1 Willian. And I think this is Chelsea's only chance to win something, isn't it?
Yeah. What's the draw?
The draw... It's currently 12-5. So 12-5 in the draw.
9-2 for Vardy isn't bad either.
No, Leicester in a game like this, it looked like they could cause a defence like that a bit of problems. Vardy's firing at the
just
moment.
If you look at the league form of these two and you're wondering how do I pick a winner here, their league form between them, they've won just 3 of their last 10 games. So they're both a little bit shaky. Draw. So if you're going to draw 12-5, that's what I was fancying.
Yeah.
A little point on Mahrez. So you know the way he went on strike during the transfer window there.
Excellent since.
It just shows, okay, no, you're not going anywhere. We're not signing anything. Yeah. And he takes a week out of the team or whatever, and he's back playing brilliantly as well. And Liverpool should have done that with Coutinho.
But it's just stuff about, like, you know, his teammates aren't going to welcome him back and all that. Of course they are.
Yeah. Why wouldn't they?
I think it depends on different styles of management, though. Like, Klopp, it looks like you have to very much buy into his thing. He's hugging all his players after the game. Klopp, well, looks a much calmer manager. He probably...
But sure, Coutinho wanted to go during the summer too, and he kept him on.
He did, but they had.
He was grand.
Yeah, like I think it depends on each style of play that you look at. You look at something like.
Wasn't he licking his hole? right. Who's going to win this game, lads? The battle of the former champions.
Leicester.
Yeah.
I'll go with the draw.
I'm going to draw.
I'm going to go with the draw as well.
I just wanted to ask Paul really quickly as well before we move off the football completely, because there's a bit of League of Ireland.
Mm.
So we thought we'd...
Oh, yeah.
We haven't had Paul here.
Love a bit of League of Ireland.
He was very busy off doing a bit of stuff with the Mirror last time we spoke, League of Ireland. Mm. Interesting Dublin derby this week with Rovers and Pats. 5-6 Rovers, 9-4 the draw. 3-1 St. Pats. They like a Dublin derby. They get up for it.
Yeah, they've started reasonably well as well. I was having a look at the prices before I came in here, and I've gone for a bit of a random 10-1 double for the two games in Dublin on Friday night, Bowes and Sligo and Daly Mount, and Rovers and Pats and Tallaght to be draws.
I think I'd be favouring Pats 3-1 to win that. Actually, I've been sort of derided Pats most of last year. Actually, whenever we were on talking about them,
Rovers scored 12 goals in two games before Monday's game against Cork. I was down in Cork for that game, and they just weren't, like, they were probably the better team. Maybe for first half hour against Cork, Cork got their penalty and never looked back, even though they only won 1-0. Rovers have very tacking, sort of talented four or five players, and they're doing well. But I just think, yeah, I think there's something about St. Pat's maybe for this particular game.
I don't have the prices in front of me, but Limerick-Cork, I mean, that has the potential to be another really one-sided game. So steaming on Cork and the handicap minus 3 or something like that.
Yeah, I think Limerick has shipped 14 goals in 5 league games.
Still going all right, though.
Yeah, well, they're still picking up a result here or there, but if Cork are on their A game, that could be another heavy beat.
Two for different leagues, isn't it, Paul? Really, I mean, Dundalk and Cork, really, and the rest.
Kind of boils down to the European money, you know, because while the prize money for winning the League of Ireland is bang average, like I think it's 110, 120 grand or something like that to win the League of Ireland.
Quarter of John Delaney's salary, give or take.
Well, yeah, that's true enough. A third, anyway. But getting through rounds in Europe is just mad money, and UEFA have increased that money. Basically, what they're doing now, without going into it, is it's actually going to be harder for an Irish team to reach the group stages of Champions League or Europa League. Not impossible for the Europa League, certainly, but what they're doing to negate that a little bit is they're throwing more money at the clubs. So while it'll be harder to make the group stages, you have to go through an extra round, basically. There's a lot more money. They've bumped up the prize money, and a Cork or a Dundalk, even if they just get through one round or go out in the first round, they could still pocket 400 grand, 500 grand.
You set Dundalk up, it's massive money, isn't it?
Yeah, and Dundalk obviously raked up 5 or 6 million from their Europa League. So that's where the gulf is in the Premier Division, you know.
That's the football. So lads, we'll move on to the GAA. There's a huge amount of games on this weekend. A couple of the ones that I want to focus on are in Division 1 of the Football League. Kerry Kildare and Galway Dublin. The reason being, I suppose, is to just initially reflect on Kerry Dublin. It was a bit of a massacre in the second half. It was Dublin were a goal ahead at half time, but Kerry just absolutely collapsed. Do you see Kerry coming back from this? Both teams missing plenty of players, fair enough.
And Kerry will come back from it. I mean, to what extent they do, that's the big question. 1-8-8 at half time. It was actually a brilliant first half, Shane. It was some great foot pass and movement. Kerry opened them up equally as much. The big thing for Fitzmaurice and the management will be how they just capitulated to the extent they did. I mean, that'll be worrying them. But I said it here a number of weeks ago. They have no defensive system in place. They're making schoolboy errors. Some of the defending was atrocious from Kerry. Dublin, I have to say, since the All-Ireland, the second half is the best I've seen Dublin. I mean, the guys, I think the rotation system, people don't realise how good he's doing what he's doing at the moment, the way he's doing it, Gavin. He's been brilliant.
Explain it to us then.
My own read and take on it is, and I think this is where he's psychologically doing probably as much damage to the opposition off the field as on the field. The big games over the last few years, they've been very tight. I mean, four of Ireland's last 3 years, one of them a replay, they've won a combined score by 5 points. But in all the other games, this is where they're doing the real damage on teams. They're winning. The attitude and application to win every single game is incredible. I've never seen it in the history of the GAA. That includes Kilkenny, great Kerry team. They are going out to win, and he's dropping one or two guys, bringing one or two guys in. He's playing them all off each other.
Yeah.
And if you're a Dublin player, I spoke to Shane outside before the show, the brand, the name and what it does for you is, it's huge. It's everything. So these guys all want part of that, even if it's only a few minutes. So the best players in Dublin, they're going to do that. The one thing with Kerry is Kerry have brilliant young talent, and he's probably playing too many together. The system of play, they don't really know where they're at. I think this team beat Dublin in the league final last year, so they're not just going to go away. Outside of Mayo, they're probably next best, which is probably not saying a huge amount. But the second half will worry them. 11 points in total. Very, very poor from Kerry. They don't do defeats like that. But they are young, and the summer and the ground and players coming back will help them, but not enough to beat Dublin.
Yeah, no. And to give Kerry their dues a small bit, they did miss a couple of goal chances in the first half. Sean O'Shea kicked one wide.
Gainey hit the post.
But Dublin also hit the post as well. I think that same post was hit 3 or 4 times in the game. Kerry folk are a sensitive bunch too, I notice, because I read an article from at the start of the week from Bomber Liston, who spent, I felt, more time than he needed in his article focusing on how Kerry were good in that first half and talking about how, as talk of 4 in a row ramps up for Dublin later on in the summer, you know, things could change and all that. And I get both teams were missing players, but I tweeted about how I felt that wasn't the right thing to be focusing on. And I had plenty of Kerry lads getting on to me about it, saying, you know, I mean, they're unbelievably sensitive about it.
Oh, I know. Look, you asked Paddy, God rest him, when he called them animals, didn't he, at one stage?
A bunch of effing animals or something to that effect.
My favourite team growing up and always Kerry, I mean, this Dublin team I love watching. I love the way they go about their business. So those two teams for me were the best by a long way. If you look at the Kerry people and you look at the Mayo supporters, etc., to me the Kerry supporters should have been up and forced to support that young team last week. They weren't. They genuinely weren't. And there are question marks there. It's that going back, you know, they think they're maybe living in the years gone by when they used to just turn up in semi-final and final. That is not the case anymore. They do need to get behind the team a bit more. They don't make the effort that the supporters make. They do not. It's as simple as that. And they are very, very sensitive. And let me tell you, the Kerry supporters do not want the Dubs at any cost to do four in a row and certainly not five in a row.
Well, for this match, Kerry against Kildare, it's Kildare are more or less going to get relegated. They are, but
they're down. They're gone.
It's their
they're
last gone. Chance to sort of, you know, they need to get a win or two on board.
Kildare are down, and
Kerry need the win to steer clear of relegation.
They do, and they will win. Kerry will win at home. I'm convinced they'll definitely win at home. But the confidence is low. I was there during the game, covering the game last week. Mayo actually were very, very good. They made a series in 10. I know it's only Kildare, but the attitude of the senior leaders for Mayo last week was brilliant. I mean, it was stunning, some of the performances. Kildare, to me, ninth game in a row, Shane, to lose, competitive game, nine in a row. Last year's championship, a Bourne Cup and league, they haven't won a game in nine. Confidence is on the floor. They're not quite as bad as the league table suggests, though.
But they are the best of the rest in Leinster too, which
that
just
is
shows
the most damning statement you said.
Like, Leinster is just a wasteland. I think, I mean, it's heading that direction because Dublin are so unbelievably superior to everyone. And they'd do this no matter what province they were thrown in, they'd do this anywhere. But I think the entry level to be competitive is so high now that players are walking away from panels around the country en masse because they're like, what's the point?
You know the way in sport in general, things can be very cyclical. Mm. You know, certain team has a good 4 or 5 years and then they disappear. And we're talking here about a lot of young lads coming through at Kerry and what sort of impact they'll have and will they have to bide their time a little bit in terms of championship and all that. Just from my point of view, from the outside looking in, like, this Dublin thing, is that cyclical? Like, is that going to, like, to me, it just looks like they've done everything right going back a few years ago.
I couldn't see it being cyclical because even if you
that's
look
what I'm
at
saying, like,
maybe
it
the
just
top six or eight clubs in Dublin club championship football, I think would survive certainly in Division 3 of the National Football League. And if that's the case, you think of the amount of players that are in that system that they can pick from.
I did a piece on exactly what you're speaking, but very interesting over the last couple of days for Column in the Mirror. It's go back to 10 years ago. And this is where particularly folk, they don't really remember and study it. 10 years ago, Dublin got absolutely destroyed, annihilated by Tyrone. The following year, 2009, got the biggest footballing lesson by Kerry by 17 points. Way far worse than what Dublin gave Kerry last week. 2010, they're looking over a cliff and we, Meade, an average team at the time, stuffed them with 5 goals and hammered them again. So they literally, and Gilroy is on the brink, Dublin football, the brand, everything is nearly virtually extinct at this stage. And 2011, that moment, when Kerry should have closed out the game, 4 points up at 6 minutes ago, absolutely, and McMenamin's great goal and the wonder
with the
point
hop.
With the double hop at Cluxton, that changed everything for Dublin. But what they've done since has been incredible. But in the big games, they've been tight. They've been very tight. I mean, the mental attitude, we played Dublin, genuinely, when we played Dublin, they always had brilliant, skillful players. I mean, incredible stuff. But it was more I than we. Fact, they were never quite as fit as they should have been to sustain 70 minutes. And the unity and the structure and tactical astuteness on the line was never what it is now. So they've done so much work, but it's not all about money what they've done. I mean, for 10 years ago, they were the whipping dogs in championship football. And the last few years, why haven't Kilkenny, when Kilkenny were far more superior in Ireland, why do people not ask for the Kilkenny to be split in two and it's all about money and this and the other? I think when this great Dublin bunch, and I spoke to some of the Dublin players socially, when the 8-10 core leaders go, Dublin will not continue doing this.
I don't agree with you.
I know, and you're entitled to that.
I'll fight you.
Absolutely. But I'm convinced in 3 or 4 years' time, it won't be to the same extent it is now. I believe that And the Dublin supporters and people only realise the great, the true greatness of six or eight or ten of these guys. I'm talking about the Cluxtons. And go right through that team. I won't even start mentioning them. You don't pick these guys up. James McCarthy, different guys. They've been absolutely incredible. And it's when they finish, the good players will come in, but they won't. They won't win All-Ireland's in 5 or 10 years' time.
Like the football generation with Duff and Robbie and all that type
of thing.
You
know, yeah,
there,
I think
no replacement.
Now, they've been the best team. To me, the big question is, which is the greatest football team of all time? The Kerry team, great Kerry team, or this Dublin team? For me, this Dublin team. Mm. But the biggest problem I've seen going forward, guys, really is how poor, and Shane touched on it, the great teams of the past that used to, including my own county, compete with Dublin, they've regressed so much and become so poor to an extent. That's the worry going forward for Dublin, that the regression of those counties is at a much more alarming rate than the progression of Dublin.
And but they're, I think they're linked. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, because people are seeing that Dublin are so good. Other teams are like, geez, what? Our players are just walking away, because why put your life on hold that much when you're having the chance of beating Dublin? That's kind of, I think that's fairly realistic.
No, it is a very valid point, but overall I do think, and I can't wait for the day that somebody comes on and beat them. That's why I think Galway might start on Sunday.
Yeah, well, first of all, just to kind of nail our colours to the mast with Kerry Kildare, my tip here would be a draw or either team to win by less than 4 points is 10 to 11. Could be wrong, but I don't think it's the worst bet.
I'm just going to flag up how close it is, or might well be, and certainly in points scoring. I mean, Kerry are 1-4, the draw is 10-1, Kildare 7-2, and it's 4 points on the handicap. So Kerry minus 4, 10-11 looks still a little bit stingy, I suppose. I was going to flag up there's a few interesting online offers with Kerry to score first, to lead at halftime, and to win at 11-8, or something like.
Good one, that's a
only,
good bet.
Only Kerry to score a goal at 2-1.
Hmm. See, the weather's going to be poor the weekend, is one thing I'd keep in. Down there in the pitch and all that, it's fairly heavy. It's hard to score a lot down there in Kerry, if it's a, but I think, you know, Kildare are gone. They are, there's no way back for them, so I think Kerry will win. It's how much to win by.
Mm. So Galway against Dublin is in Pearse Stadium Sunday at 2 o'clock.
Cracking
as well.
Cracking game.
Yeah, I think so. And what's interesting about this is, like, we really need Galway to become a competitive force, and it would be a very interesting milestone for Kevin Walsh to win a league this year, because he's won Division 4 and Division 3 with Sligo, and he won Division 2 last year with Galway. And this year, he'd become the, as far as I can see, he'd become the only manager ever to win all four tiers in the league. Which
incredible. Yeah,
a fair
that's
achievement.
A great start.
He's already won Connacht. Yeah. So, jeez.
He won't beat Dublin twice this year, though. I don't think if he beats them next, you know, if they win next.
But isn't it crucial over the course of the fact that they're going to meet in this game on Sunday, which is a bit of a dead rubber in terms of the result. That doesn't matter too much. And they're also going to meet in the league final, because Dublin will get another point to guarantee that happening. Over the course of the two games, if Galway are going to become the force that football needs them to become, they need to focus, you know, forget the other game that they have in the league. They need to focus on their two matches against Dublin to see what can we learn. Can we live at this pace? Or how close are we?
I think they're in serious trouble. Not in serious trouble, I'll explain what I mean by that. I think they'll play Dublin in a big game. Mm. They will play them in the league final, I think.
Yeah.
I believe. And the biggest game is just a number of weeks down the road. And I believe they could fall into a big trap. It's going to take unbelievable management by Walsh to actually get these guys right. The most important game for Galway is the Mayo match. It's huge. It's a massive game. So you're going to have a league final maybe against Dublin. They're coming down. Mayo probably get a bit of momentum, stay up in Division 1, get guys back. They played very well last week. It's a big ask for Galway to keep peaking. And I don't mean to peak in a league final against Dublin, or they will want to play well in Pearse Stadium and put in a big performance. I think it's a big test of their system, the players, the new players they've introduced, and then to do it against Dublin again and then face Mayo. I'd be worried for them. I wasn't a few weeks ago. The closer it gets now, I'd be worried that they can beat Mayo. But I think they'll do well against Dublin Sunday, but and maybe shock Dublin.
Don't they need to make sure that, unlike Cork a couple of years ago in a league semi-final or final, and then Derry in a league final, that they don't end up starting out pretty well against Dublin and then get absolutely annihilated, slaughter, and both of those teams have fallen off the map in terms of competitiveness?
That is a worry. I just think Walsh is a super manager.
Yeah, but they've lost to some poor, like some teams that they shouldn't really have been stuffed by. Like, they got stuffed by Kerry last year, they got stuffed by Tipperary the year before. I mean, I know he's done well over the years.
I think the player Shane that brought in, I mean, the colleague, the fullback is brilliant.
Sean Andy O'Kellig, yeah.
Yeah, Cook at midfield. Walsh at half-back has been a revelation. I think he's been player of the league for Galway. Up front, McHugh, the free-taker, a real good free-taker now. I mean, the likes of Heaney's form, Walsh, Comer as captain has been the single biggest decision he's made. The five new players who've helped him hugely. And I think they've a system and a good coach in Talley and an excellent manager. If these guys aren't going to stay, thank God for Mayo over the last couple of years. Yeah. But if these guys aren't going to progress, we're in serious trouble. Yeah. The Dubs will cakewalk them.
If you can actually put the finishing touches onto what Shane Walsh does in terms of...
I'm writing about it. It's shocking.
He was, like, some of his play the other day was unbelievable in terms of pace, turning guys.
So many
chances. The finishing, either the final ball or the finishing touch. But you know he's capable of so much more. He obviously just, whatever it is, there's something missing in his head and it'll click someday.
Would have composure in that situation. Yeah.
But and Eamon Brannigan is another brilliant kind of speed merchant as well. So Galway halftime, Dublin full-time here is my bet. I know I love a halftime, full-time. 4-1. 4-1, that's not bad.
What's Galway halftime and full-time? I just think there might be a
I'll give you the betting here first.
Guys, I'm going to give a bit of value to you.
3-1, just like Galway in the match betting, and the draw is 9-1, and Dublin are 3-10. I'll have a quick look here. For Galway halftime, full-time, 15-2.
I'm going to actually say, I'm going to give a bit of value to the listeners. Yeah, no, I think there could be shock on the cards.
Right. I was, again, looking at this, the same type of bet we talked about in the Kerry game there, the score first for Dublin to lead at halftime and to win 11-8. And also had a look on that halftime, full-time you mentioned there. Even both Dublin to win both halves, I would have thought it evens. Doesn't look too
Is there any bet with the finish with the 15 players each? Or they won't finish with 15 players each? I do believe there may be one or two red cards in this game.
I definitely think Galway need to kind of come away from these two games against Dublin and realise this is where we can hurt
them.
Our pace is going to kill them, because you know Shane Walsh's pace is unbelievable, and also I'm sure Dublin will learn who are our man markers for if we meet later down the line. So that's the Gaelic football. Actually, just a little quick word on Meath, who they could be dragged down to Division 3 if they lose to Louth, who are almost certainly going to get dragged down to Division 3.
I think we will beat Louth and Drogheda. Now it's a desperate pitch. It's my life. It's anything can happen. Louth will love Meath coming to Drogheda and turning them over. It's a dangerous one. And we've lost we've 3 points out of 10. Cork beat us quite well. Tipperary and Cavan. It's not great at the moment. I just think we need to stay in Division 2. But Down or Meath or Clare. If Clare get one win, it's Down or Meath will go down. They're playing the last game of the league in Navan, and whoever wins that will stay up and the other will go down. That would be a disaster for either county, a disaster. So not good at the moment. We'd expect to be in a better place than we are, but I'll be honest, there's no way, nice way of saying we just aren't good enough and we don't have the talent.
So looking to the hurling then, the other code, Limerick against Clare is one of the two games that I want to look at this weekend.
What a way to finish off the week of sport, though. That's the late game on Sunday, isn't it?
Which?
Limerick Clare.
Yeah, it's on a 4 o'clock
on
Sunday.
You've got Cheltenham, you've got the rugby, you've got a bunch of football that you can kind of skip through. And then this game, which should be really close, should be decent, I would have thought.
Like, Limerick were sensational in their turnaround win against Galway last weekend. I think you have to call out the Adrian Toohey incident. He shoved his hurley into the mummy daddy button of
the nether regions. Yeah,
it was bad form. Now he did that. He was kind of he was a little concerned for the All Ireland final last year for a helmet pull against Tipperary, which he did from behind him. So it was very hard to say he reached back and intentionally pulled the helmet. But I kind of feel like, you know, from a hurling point of view, you know, if you've got someone's hurley in your hand and you're pulling it off, and this incident, that, you know, it's unmistakable. That was very intentional. Looked like someone had, or his helmet might have been interfered with, but you cannot be hitting a lad in the pills because, you know, it's potentially devastating.
Shane, he went to the lines, man. And why did not just give him a red card? When you see some of the stuff that people have been reprimanded for, or getting red cards and guys missing All-Irelands, like, that was a straight red card. It was a dangerous, dangerous, dirty belt.
It's pretty despicable and even scummy. You could use Eddie Jones' own quotes in here for that. But do you think sometimes it gets blown out a bit out of proportion on social media or people coming out?
No, it deserves to be called out.
Yeah, absolutely. But do you think something like this is maybe just because it's less common? Remember the Suarez bite? Everyone was up in arms about him being thrown out of the game because he bit someone, whereas you're doing equal damage of knocking someone around at times. You could do a lot more damage than than that. Now, maybe there's a little bit different.
There's just something particularly nasty about it.
It's despicable.
Because it's potentially so catastrophic in terms of what you can do to
it's
somebody.
It's cowardly, it's dirty, it's mean, it's rotten. It and spitting are the two worst instances. I mean, for hurling a footballer, you know, manliness for about a game. Yeah. You know, I mean, like eye gouging in rugby, whatever you want to say it. But I watched it the other night. Yeah, I couldn't believe straight bang, and he doesn't get a red card.
Yeah, so I actually think it's a very interesting game, Limerick against Clare, and they've met many times over the years. Clare won their first three games of the league. They've lost two in a row, but I wouldn't be particularly reactionary about it.
No.
I don't think they're that amazing, as the three wins in a row suggested. I don't think they're now all of a sudden a poor team. Clare won the league a couple of years ago. It didn't stop them having yet another stinker of a championship, all bar their 2013 season when they won the All-Ireland. In the decade either side of it, they haven't actually been made it as far as Croke Park. So in general, they are either an average side, underachievers, whatever way you want to look at it. I think for Limerick's belief, doing what they did to Galway, to come from so far behind to win, has got to be huge for belief, because this is a county that's always had talent. But they just never back it up. Every single year, it seems to be a case of, geez, there's good players coming and they never make good on it. So I think Limerick need this, just to kind of build on that belief that they got against Galway. Like, Galway's season turned on the league last year, coming behind against Waterford from 10 points down to win, hammering Limerick, as it happened in the league semi-final, hammering Tip in the league final, and up, they were up and running for the season. So I think Limerick, the likes of Limerick, Wexford could do with a league title. I'd fancy Limerick to win this in the Gaelic grounds as well. And what are the odds here?
I was going to flag up a separate bet, but actually, yeah, Limerick evens the draw 8-1 and Clare at even. So it's really tight, only a point in the handicap market. And there's a particular market, I'm not sure if we mentioned on the show before, might have even mentioned earlier on today. I think you might have mentioned it there, Shane. A draw either team by less than 4 points. Now, it's shade of odds on 8-11, so it's pretty short, but that looks absolutely nailed on. It looks like buying money.
Well, Limerick to win and both teams to score a goal is 7-4 as well, which isn't bad. And actually, it's all the more impressive that Limerick have managed to do this, to get promoted for the first time in 8 or 9 years, considering that they don't have the Dempsey players. So, so that's that game anyway. I'm going to nail my colours to the Limerick mast. Just one other game worth looking at is the relegation playoff between Cork and Waterford. It's the final game before Munster for either of these two teams. And last year, there was a big thing about Waterford. They hadn't played in 11 weeks before they ended up flopping in their first Munster game against Cork, as it happened. But the way it's working out this year, they're actually going to have a 10-week break anyway between this game and their Munster opener. So
How crazy is that?
Yeah. I think it's like Waterford beat Cork a couple of weeks ago in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, which was another terrible pitch.
On the beach.
Yeah. And this one's in Páirc Uí Rin, though, so it should flow a little bit better. Cork have lost 4 in a row. Waterford have just won 2 games in a row. I think Waterford need this badly. I think they need a win just to kind of go through that break that they had last year, which was probably a negative void for them, to just go in with a little bit of comfort and feel like we're in the right place. We'll see you after the club month and we'll go again. So the other thing is, there's going to be a sweeper here. Cork don't score goals that often. I think no goal 10-1 isn't bad.
That's a big price.
Yeah, just 8 goals between them.
I was
going to
say
games.
The betting's very similar for this as the previous game. We talked about Cork and Waterford about it, evens the draw at 8-1 and 1 point in the handicap again. So something like that, I think, stands out probably as
tight games, a lot of tight games in the club finals as well. Very tight.
Yeah, yeah. Cara Finn against Nemo and my own Kula against Napiershig as well. So a couple of big games this weekend.
Just ashamed. I just on 1 point there. I know very little could be done about it, but the Twickenham to be clashing with the club finals and Ireland going for the slam, it's a disaster for sport followers, really, you know. It's a shocker.
To cancel their St. Patrick's Day parade in Selbridge because of rugby.
Did they do that? I mean, it's great.
Poor Selbridge.
We love our sport, but it's just, you can't be in two places at one time.
I should flag up as well, just before we move off the GA, the double odds offers on a couple of those selected games we mentioned. So double odds if your player scores inside 20 minutes on the two club finals, Cara Finn versus Nemo and Kula versus Napiercig, as well as Kerry versus Kildare, and then on the hurling front, Wexford versus Galway and Limerick Clare. So a bunch of the games we covered there with loads
plenty
of value
of games going on both codes. We haven't
double
even
odds if your player scores inside 20 minutes.
Just honestly, if you want, it's the two C's double for the weekend, and it's Kula and Cara Finn. That's the bet.
Appreciate the confidence, Bernard. So just a quick look at the racing then, Declan, you wanted to touch on.
Yeah, interesting to come and try and get excited for racing off the back of Cheltenham, but we're going to try anyway. We have a few interesting races to look at here, starting with Uttoxeter, the Midlands Grand National. It's pretty tricky, this one. The Klondike was, I think, the one everyone was trying to keep an eye out for David Pipe, but has been taken out of the betting on Tuesday. David Pipe has a great record in this, having won four in a row from 2011 to 2014, I think it was. But yeah, it's looking pretty open now. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I'll just find it in the betting here, because the decks have been done while we were on air, that he might still have one here. I can't see it there in the betting at the moment. David Pipe, so if he doesn't, you'll have to excuse me for that. He had Rattling Rose in there, I thought was a reasonable each way bet. It's looking tough now, because a few of the ones that I was going to flag up have actually been taken out since. I think I'll just point out, get on the Jaeger. I actually thought he might be a bit shorter in the bet, and I think he might still go off Fav. Back up and Trip this time. You should enjoy the slog, and the form of the Roland Merrick at Weatherby is working out pretty nicely as well. It was a few in behind him that day, subsequently won. Only gets a £7 rise as well, and he should be able to cope with it in this kind of race. He should really enjoy this, I would have thought, actually. I think he's about 6-1 there at the moment, so short enough, but it's just a few in there at the moment that might struggle. Bob Ford is another one each way. You'd probably be well worth a look there.
I'm just having a look at it here as well, and Kerry Lee has about 3 or 4 different horses in there, and I'd take a little each way punt on Alfie Spinner at around 14-1, 12-1, 14-1, something like that.
The one thing I worried about Alfie Spinner, I think he's one of the oldest in the field, he's about 13, and the form of that Welsh Grand National, a few of them have looked sort of a little bit up down off the back of that, but it definitely, I mean, he wouldn't write off an old boy like that yet. No. He's had plenty about him in previous races. I should point out as well, just one or two to note at Navan. Now, these races would probably cut up a fair bit, so the betting isn't all that reliable on them, but I've spoken to the traders this morning with regards to the Webster Cup. If Dr. Phoenix goes, looks likely he'll go off favourite here. It's a really interesting field. Greyfield is the one that I'd probably note coming back up into this, has a £7 penalty returning from injury. Dr. Phoenix, I think, is coming back in this as well. Atoy Phil, you've got in here in the betting. So there's a few. I'd be interested if Atoy Phil turns up here. I mean, at the moment, you probably get him 5-1 or so, but again, there's a bunch of them that might not turn up here. Another one at Navan to note then is the Flying Bolt, Novices Chase, and I think Willie Mons has about 4 in here, so good chance this field will be cut to absolute shreds. But you've got the likes of Tombstone. Tombstone is a £7 penalty coming back in here, but still looks very, very prominent in the betting. I might get him about 11-4 at the moment. Could be well worth a look.
I don't think we could leave the pod this week without touching on Tiger Mania in the golf, because just how Tiger performed at the Valspar last week and came only second to Paul Casey. He had a putt on the last to put himself into a playoff. Didn't quite happen. And, you know, the Arnold Palmer Invitational is starting in Bay Hill today. So, I mean, there's probably no point in touching on the betting there, but he's going off his favourite at 11-2. So, I mean, anything could happen by the time you listen to this. So we just look forward to the Masters that's happening in a couple of weeks. And when I looked at it, he was 11-1, fourth favourite, which just seems absolutely nuts for a guy who for so long was just injury ravaged, who had that mugshot 9 or 10 months ago. Just everything seemed to be going wrong, and all of a sudden he's back.
This is based on one tournament as well.
Yeah. Could you take that 11-1?
No.
Do you think you'd have a play on Tiger at 11-1?
I wouldn't put your money on it.
No, absolutely not.
It could have been 500.
We're off the back of Cheltenham. We've just learned some of these great things coming back. They're still not.
He is different this time. I mean, there's no doubt it's different. I mean, you see a little golf, you just take Rory McIlroy and Spieth, and at the moment they're struggling. Like he beat everyone in the field bar one guy. But I just, looking at where he came, he was my, I just used to adore watching Tiger in his pomp. To see where he went personally and to the depths of despair, self-inflicted, the whole thing. And the mental strength to get yourself back up from where he was, I mean, he was just completely, he was gone. Everything about him was gone. And I just think to get back up there and even compete, he's some competitor. Yeah, he's some competitor.
When you think that his clubhead speed last week was 129.2 miles per hour, like it's the fastest on the tour this year. And like biggest American TV audience
with
for a non-major.
With a few years back. I mean, I'm not trying to, I did love watching him. I do enjoy him. I don't think people will give him the credit for the injuries he's had, but the mental strength, losing your family, the kids, the wife, all the hassle has went with all of that. Do you see, and the picture of him trying to walk that night and the line, he was caught in the car and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it was sad, but I'll tell you what, If he wins one tournament, guys, don't bet against him winning the major again. Don't.
I wouldn't. And like, would you be more likely to tune into the back nine of a major if Rory was there?
Do you see the stats in America? The second Tigers finished in the golf, 40-50% tune out.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it. Mm. Worldwide.
Tell you what, there's a few in that betting that are interesting. If you're going to take, well, I imagine a lot of us will take Tiger on. I wouldn't rule out Ricky Fowler in the home events ever. He's about 20s at the moment. And Brooks Koepka, I'm not sure if he's going to be back for. He was out with injury for a while. Yeah. He's come good for me a few times actually.
Good bet.
Yeah. And Brooks Koepka 80-1 is not a bad out. But look, he's not been amazing. Recently.
What's Rory?
Rory, I will find him here because that's a good question.
He has to kick in at some stage.
The Masters were tweeting there about how, you know, 18 days to go until the Masters, and there's 1,600 azaleas in bloom along number 13. So
really whets the appetite.
Yeah. Didn't Sergio Garcia, he's after calling his baby azalea as well after that's the flowers. Right. Yeah. Anyway, apropos of nothing.
Rory is 14-1, by the way.
Yeah.
We spoke earlier about rugby being a different world.
Yeah, that's true. All right, look, that's more or less it. Just my final bet of the week. No goal in Cork, Waterford, 10-1. Also, Dublin Tipperary in the hurling. Only team to score a goal, Tip 11-4. Handicap is 9 points. Once you see the teams, decide yourself after that, but it's worth keeping an eye on. Any other bets of the week, lads? We have to go.
Just quickly, Ireland, the weekend that's in it, I'm going to be there. It's -1 even money, I think, Ireland to win. And we've got to give Shane a mention, wish him all the best for Saturday. It's a good big luck. Game from an Ireland club final. People do not realise that is incredible. I think the two C's, Coola, Cara Finn on the double with Ireland. Maybe a treble.
I should have prepped the man of the match bet and get yourself in there. We could have all chucked a couple of quid in on that.
Unbackable favourite. All right, lads. Thanks very much. From myself, Shane Stapleton, from Declan Maron, from Paul O'Hare,
cheers,
and Bernard Flynn. We've it all said. We'll chat to you again next week. All the best.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.